Hello and welcome to Jive Talking, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and in this edition, we talk to World Sailor of the Year, Torben Grail.
It's managed for what we've achieved and for the risk it is, but I take it as a whole team, now because it was a team effort, so I think everybody deserves the same.
We find out all about the Louis Vuitton Trophy with Team Origin team director Mike Sanderson.
It's wonderful to be back racing against other America's Cup teams in good venues. Even though we're racing supplied boats, the boats are very even, and so we're having some fantastic racing.
And hear about life on board Artemis Ocean Racing with Sam Davis and Sydney Gavinier in the Transat Jacques Vabre. But first, as always, it's the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. Marc Guillemot and Charles Cordrelier on Safran seem to have an unassailable lead in the Transat Jacques Vabre, just after the halfway point. In the IMOCA rankings, Armel Leclerc could miss out on top spot after being forced to retire in the TJV. Michel Desjoyeaux, Marc Guillemot and Sam Davis could all now claim the lead. Six Extreme 40 teams will contest the first Extreme Sailing Series Asia event in Hong Kong. Bad news for Frank Camas and his Group Armour 3 team, as they're forced to abandon their Jules Verne trophy round-the-world record attempt. And when this programme was recorded, Team New Zealand had the best record in the Louis Vuitton Trophy after the round robins, Team Origin, Azura and Synergy making up the semi-finals. OK, now it's off to Nice, where I caught up with Mike Sanderson, the team director of Team Origin.
With Mike Sanderson, who's currently down in the south of France at the Louis Vuitton Trophy. And Mike, it must be great, one, to go racing again, and after the success in Auckland, to actually have what is now beginning to look like a regular set of regattas.
Yeah, it's very exciting, Guy, and it's wonderful to be back racing against other America's Cup teams in good venues, even though we're racing supplied boats, the boats are very even, and so we're having some fantastic racing. So, all good as far as we're concerned.
Now, how obviously Auckland was a success, and then you've moved to the south of France. What was the? How did the teams communicate? How did the ball get rolling, if you like?
It was basically formed from a meeting which happened during the Auckland event between quite a good bunch of the team principals, and it was decided that this format was something which would be great to continue, especially in these difficult times while the America's Cup's in court. So it was seen that what a great opportunity to have a series where the cup teams could compete and have some races around the world where everyone got to race against each other again. So, it was really an initiative by the teams just to get more certainty of their own agenda going forward. And we'll be doing a regatta this year and then a few regattas next year, so it's just great to be back on the water, to be honest.
Now, as a team director, how difficult is it, given the situation with the America's Cup at the moment, to get all your team in one place, if you like, to actually say, look guys, something's happening again now, come back?
We've worked very hard to keep the team informed as much as possible through all the court proceedings, and the guys keep pretty in tune with it themselves, and they're well aware that there's only so much we as Team Origin can do to help the situation. So the only thing we can do is try and work with some of the other teams to have some regattas which aren't pivotal on what happens either in court or in the America's Cup match in February. So by organising these regattas next year, by a fair few of the teams being involved in the TP52 class, including now ourselves, this is something which we can now take to the bank as a sure thing.
Now, that's made sure we know where we are as far as the Louis Vuitton Trophy is concerned. Let's turn now to the racing, and one, it's attracted a stellar cast of sailors and a few surprises in the early stages of the event as well.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think there's been a few upsets in the racing, and you know, and but all the teams are very strong. This hasn't been the windiest of venues, so I think, you know, because the teams have all got very strong afterguards and very strong, you know, America's Cup helmsmen, what we're seeing here is that, you know, maybe it's more tactical and up to the choices that you make and things like that on the race course. I think if we had, you know, a week of 20 knots, it would get more powerful for the teams that have spent more time together and things like that.
I did want to mention the afterguard, as I know this is an international podcast, it goes out all around the world, but I was kind of looking at Team Origin's afterguard. All British, 6 Olympic gold medals, 2 Volvo Ocean Race winners. It's not a bad back line, is it?
No, it's not a bad back line, but you know, we've got to you know, we've got to start singing the same song. We all know that just a list of star, you know, star-studded guys doesn't do the job. What we need to do is make sure that we get better and better at singing the same song. And you know, that's why it's so important to spend as much time on the water racing, or quality racing, as possible. And you know, that's why these events are so important, and why Team Origin, you know, needs to be here and needs to do the TP52 season is so that we get, you know, as much time on water and catch up as quickly as we can to the likes of teams like, you know, Team New Zealand that have been doing, you know, both lots of America's Cup sailing and lots of TP sailing. So, you know, we've got a fantastic bunch of guys in the back of the boat, but now we need to really get the chemistry working well.
Mike, as team director, does that fall under your remit? Is that a big part of your job?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my role in the team is to, you know, provide and, you know, maintain the platform for these very talented guys to do their best work. So I think that's, you know, that's probably my, you know, my single biggest role is to make sure that we're doing things properly and that we're providing, as I say, the right platform to let them do their best work. And I think we've got that balance pretty right. So fingers crossed we can get it together.
Final couple of questions, Mike. One, obviously through to the semi-finals. I'm sorry that we publish earlier than we'd like, so we don't know the full result. Was that almost the minimum that you were looking for when you arrived in Nice?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, for sure. It would have been very disappointing not to have made the semi-finals. We expect big things out of this team, though. We've worked very hard, and we're here to win. So, you know, anything short of winning will be very disappointing. But, you know, we've just had a little bump in the road this morning by losing the first race of the semis, and now we've got to get straight back on the horse as quickly as possible. And the fact of the matter remains, we've still got to go out there and win two races. We've just cashed in our get-out-of-jail-free card a little bit early, or a bit earlier than I would have liked.
And a final thought, Mike, on your role in the boat as runner. How is that working out for you?
I'm pretty sure that, you know, I'm doing a faultless job at the runner, guy, to be honest, you know. No, it's you know, the big reason for me to be on the boat is to make sure that I've got the feel of the team. There's nothing worse. You know, take this morning's race, for example, where we lost to Azura first up in the semis. You know, that would be terrible if the guys had to come ashore and explain to me what went wrong and why we lost. But, you know, I'm in amongst it there. I know what we did well, I know what we did badly, and there's no explaining necessary. I'm in there amongst it. And so, you know, the runners is a pretty easy job for me, but I'm really enjoying getting back into the physical side of the sport after standing behind the wheel for probably a little bit too long. and you know, I really love it. So now, happy with my job as the runner.
Well, Mike Sanderson was World Sailor of the Year in 2006 when he led ABN AMRO 1 to victory in the Volvo Ocean Race. This year, Torben Grail has taken the trophy after he skippered Ericsson to victory in the same event. I caught up with Torben and asked him how he felt about being World Sailor of the Year.
The Sailor of the Year, is, I think it's pretty important. It's a pretty good feeling for me, and I think it's nice for what we've achieved and for the race we did. But I take it as a whole team, you know, because it was a team effort. So I think everybody deserves the same.
Now, obviously, you as skipper went and collected it. Was it a strange feeling that this was a team, that you won this for a team event when you've had individual success with the Olympic sailing?
Yes, it's true, but the difference is it's a prize for the achievement in the period of a year, and I have had very good Olympic results in the past, but the two times I won the Olympics, in one of them, the first time in 1960, Johan Schumann also won it, and it was his third Olympic gold medal. So it was, I think, normal that he would take the prize. So the last time in Athens, Robert won his second gold as well. But he had won the world championship in the same year, and I didn't. So he had a better year than I did. And this time it was a post-Olympic year, and I think our result was pretty good with the Ericsson team. So,
I hate to ask, were you surprised that you won?
Well, no, I guess not as a big surprise if you consider the last winner of the race also got the prize, and that a lot of offshore sailors have been doing well on this prize as well. So. Considering that we had a pretty good race and had the record 24-hour run, I think it's kind of natural, and especially having a strong background in other sailing activities as well. So I think it adds to this. Achievement, because it's not only offshore, but it's offshore combined with other results in the past and all the kind of sailing. But having said that, I think there was other guys there with some outstanding achievements on the year. So it's, you never know what the results are going to be. So I was very glad I was chosen.
How did Ericsson react to the news, Torben?
Well, I think they are very happy too, and it's as I said, I think I consider this as a whole team achievement, and I think it's very good for Ericsson too.
Torben, what's next for you? What's next in Torben Grail's sailing world?
In short term, a couple of star regattas, South Americans and World Championship, which are going to be both here in Rio. And then I'll take the time to decide what's next.
I have to ask one final question, given you've won World Sailor of the Year for skippering the winning team in the Volvo, is there a chance we might see you again?
Well, never say never.
Of course, World Sailor of the Year has two trophies, also for the women, and so our huge congratulations go to the United States' Anna Tunnicliffe. Hopefully we will catch up with Anna before too long on the Volvo Sailing Podcast. Well, finally, it was just over the halfway point in the TJV when we put this programme together, so we thought we'd get a little touch of what it was like to be on board one of the boats. So here are Sam Davis and Sydney Gavinier aboard Artemis Ocean Racing.
Today life is a bit messy because there's no wind and wind in all the wrong directions. And it's a bit like being in the doldrums, actually. We've had big rain squalls and currently the wind's about 180 degrees from where it should be. And so we're on the other tack and there's been lots of action this morning. Right now the autopilot steering on compass. The wind information isn't trustworthy, it's only intermittent. And we've been hamstering until last night, but just as there's no wind and we've been manoeuvring, the pilot's been steering quite well. So I'm gonna try and fix it, but I've just gotta find the right moment when there's time to do it and other things aren't priority. Well, it's gonna be quite light in over the next couple of days. Well, I don't think it's ever going to be settled down in this race. whatever the conditions are, it's especially trade wind sailing, it's never as simple as you think, because forecasts give you a nice constant wind, but in reality, the trade wind changes all the time, and depending on the time of the day as well, in direction and force, and also you get these great rain squalls, which at the moment they're particularly active because we're not quite in the trade range, which is established enough. But in the next few days, I don't really expect to settle down at all. I don't think I'm going to settle down until we get to finish. well, the main focus is trying to catch up as many miles as possible. At the same time, as not taking any risks, because also we know that we're fighting for not having last place with Eve Farley. And so I think his option in the north, I'm happier where we are, to be honest, and so hopefully we might be able to overtake him if we sail properly. But at the same time, it'd be nice to try and catch up the boats in front, but at the moment we're in the same weather system and they've got a slight advantage on us because they're ahead, and the further ahead you are, actually it's the rich gets richer situation. So that's our goals. When I talked about changing goals, I was talking about the fact that our initial goal at the start was to do the best we could in terms of results and a sporting kind of performance. And now, very quickly, in the first week, our goal actually became just to finish. At one point when there were so many things breaking and failing all around us, that we actually got quite worried we weren't even going to make it to the finish. So that's a big goal as well. We settled into rhythm really quickly between the two of us on probably about on day just at the end of day two, which is kind of normal for a race like this when you've sailed enough together to know each other and trust each other enough that but the rhythm changes every day depending on the conditions, and so it's flexible. A flexible rhythm, but we're in the offshore mode. Well, in my head, we should finish in less than 10 days' time. So time-wise, I reckon we're probably slightly more than halfway. I go in time rather than in distance, because everything we need to count on board, such as the food and the diesel and the gas, and it's all in days. For us, distance is, apart from distance between us and the leader and distance between us and the boat in front or the boat behind, distance is insignificant. It's time that we need to look at.
Considering the mess all around us, we're going all right. Good spirit on board, even with our bad position, but and those big clouds on top of us. So that's nice. At the moment, we are in almost no wind, so we have a small jib on the bow and the mainsail up. And we are more or less upwind at the moment. Upwind on starboard when we should be running on port. So the good thing is we are on course at doing 5 knots, but we'll still be struggling during the day with those clouds. Hopefully the other guys are also struggling, which we don't know, but it seems on the files we have that it's normal that we struggle more than others at the back.
We just posted that this morning when we just sailed into a huge rain cloud and stopped dead with all the sails flapping in the wrong direction and just looked at each other and went, thank goodness you're here. Thank goodness we're sailing together and we've both got the same sense of humour, because otherwise it could be pretty miserable. But it's hard because you've got to keep concentrated as well and so you have to find the balance between not being suicidal because you're lost, but also so you do have to kind of find the light side of things, and also at the same time keep concentrated because it's never over until the fat lady sings, and there's a long way to go yet. So we were talking about that earlier. It's good to kind of be relaxed and not stressed and kind of chilled out about the whole thing, but at the same time you have to keep really vigilant and concentrate it and never let anything go. So it's a good balance to find, and I think we've got that, so that's good. And we actually spend quite a lot of time talking about what needs to be done to the boat to make her real raceable, because we just didn't have the time. In the preparation we did, and maybe in the preparation we did, we didn't focus on the right things, and there's so much that needs to be done to this boat to make it properly raceable, and well, double or single handed, and to make it competitive. We hear a lot about that, so hopefully we'll have a good list and a good file of things for the feedback at the end of the race as well. Apart from everything else, this boat is a really safe and solid boat. And although those things are exploding and blowing up all around us, they're superficial in terms of the safety. And that's a nice thing to know. And for Artemis to know is that I think you can. It's a good, trusty boat. So that's good.
Well, that's it for this week. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. I'll be back next time with all the latest from the world of sailing, and remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.org.